Good morning. This is the International Connection. My name is Adam Vaughn. And as every Saturday, I'm joined by Bob Marshall and Tom Rich. And today, we're going to take a look at Dr. Peter Beter, a source that we started the show with a long time ago. Dr. Peter Beter is a journalist of sorts working out of Washington, D.C. Bob, what discussion is he going to hold with us today?
Well, in our introductory show on Beter, we did the Battle of the Harvest Moon, which occurred in September 1977. I've now decided to move us ahead a year to another big event, the shooting of the Pope. And in the end of 1978, Beter explains here the death of the 30-day Pope and why that happened, and then why John Paul II came in and what role he had to play, and then leads into the assassination, which he predicted.
Now, Dr. Beter's material is perhaps the most fictional, and science fictional, I'll give you credit there. Anyway, maybe it's some of the more abstract international conspiracy type material.
Well, with regard to science fiction, I'm glad you mention it, because I just thought we'd juxtapose that with what Marshall McLuhan had to say, which we'll just play, and we happen to have it here on tape, what he had to say about science fiction and today's reality.
Even science fiction is now very far behind what's actually happening.
And I think with that introduction, we should go right into Dr. Beter.
Thank you, Dr. McLuhan. And now from Dr. McLuhan to Dr. Beter.
Today, the rulers of Russia see themselves as the police, and the Bolsheviks as the murdering thugs who are fleeing from justice. In the wake of the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, the Bolsheviks robbed Russia of her riches and murdered the owners by the millions. Now, after a struggle of six decades, the spiritual communists have turned the tables on the Bolshevik outlaws, who are leaving Russia in a growing torrent. They are seeking sanctuary mainly in the United States, where they are joining with the Bolshevik elements already here in a new Bolshevik revolution. The Bolsheviks plan to throw America and the West into nuclear war against Russia. So Russia's rulers are fighting fire with fire. Soon, their hot pursuit of the Bolsheviks will rain nuclear devastation on our heads. The Russian rulers are aware of the argument that we non-Bolsheviks of America have done Russia no harm and therefore should not suffer with the Bolsheviks. But my friends, I must report to you that this argument, reasonable though it sounds on the surface, draws nothing but scorn within the Kremlin. No harm, they say? Then why, they ask, are we giving unquestioning sanctuary to the floods of Bolsheviks now leaving Russia? And for that matter, they add, how can a people who won't lift a finger to save their own land, America, be counted as friends by anyone else? No, they conclude, you Americans are refusing to recognize what is taking place before your very eyes. It is a takeover by the Bolsheviks, and soon you will wish you were dead. By comparison, they say, Russia's nuclear attack on the Bolsheviks among you will be merciful. The Kremlin is carefully keeping track of the new Bolshevik revolution now underway in the United States. It's more sophisticated now than it was 60 years ago in Russia, but the Russians know what to watch for. And the progress of...
Now, this is one of the more complicated points. Now, a lot of these conspirators, or observers of conspiracy, divide the world up into power groups, and the Bolsheviks is one of them. Perhaps at this point you could perhaps explain some of the other groups that he's going to be referring to, and before we get to them, so that we know about them.
The three power groups that he lays out that are dominant in the 20th century are the 19th century group, traditionally from the British Empire around the Rothschilds, which he calls the Bolsheviks, that financial network that was set up under the British Empire. Then he says there's the 20th century empire of the Rockefellers, and a third empire is an old Christian faction, which he calls spiritual communists, in Russia, which worked with the Bolsheviks to knock off the Tsar, but felt betrayed by the Bolshevik elements, which were an international element that financed the Russian Revolution, and they subsequently realized they were betrayed, so they infiltrated and worked with the Bolsheviks for 60 years and managed to take over and inherit the Bolshevik victory in 1977 in the Battle of the Harvest Moon. That was the victory of the Bolsheviks over the Rockefellers.
Okay, so essentially there's the American wealth, the Rockefellers, there's the old European family wealth, and then there is the Russian Bolshevik wealth.
No, Russian Christian, secret Christian fashion. He calls them native Russians.
Okay, so those are essentially the three power groups as he sees them working in the world.
Yes.
Okay, we'll continue then.
And the progress of this secret and quiet revolution is one of the indicators that are being used by Russian intelligence to gauge the time left to prepare for war. A key factor in the American Bolshevik Revolution is the economic turmoil now building up. Central to all of this is the collapse of the United States dollar. Over 5 years ago, I described in detail the whole plan to collapse the dollar deliberately. That was the subject of my 1973 book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, published by George Braziller, 1 Park Avenue, New York, New York, 10016. And gold. If today's gold price is measured not in the United States dollars, but in hard currencies such as the German D-mark, the true value of gold would be accurately reflected. But earlier this month, I was in Europe and saw for myself just how far the collapse of the dollar has already gone. I've been to Europe innumerable times over the years, but this time I had a new experience. Many shopkeepers will not accept American dollars, whereas they used to be eagerly accepted. And where dollars are accepted, they will buy very little. The so-called almighty dollar is almighty no more. And so, my friends, the dollar is losing its international role. It is becoming a garrison dollar, a currency which will still buy a few things here, but will soon be almost useless outside the United States. Already, the federal government is preparing for a reverse split of the dollar, just as was done in the recent past in France. In this way, all old dollars will be forced out of hiding. The process of our economic imprisonment is advancing rapidly, and most Americans are still blissfully unaware of it. The so-called voluntary wage and price guidelines announced by Jimmy Carter 5 days ago will be replaced by mandatory controls in preparation for war. By the end of this year, 1978, I'm informed that all non-corporate Americans will be virtually blocked from transferring funds abroad. Part of it will be done in the name of protecting our economy and safeguarding our national security. But one of the real purposes is to serve the Bolshevik Revolution by closing and bolting the prison gates around America through your pocketbook. As the Russian rulers watch, they see the Bolshevik plan progressing right on track. Soon, economic turbulence will be joined by political turmoil. And a little later on, there will be shortages, hunger, rioting, terrorism. And as America descends into the hell of Bolshevism, there will be cannibalism in America. Even now, our own secret rulers have reactivated the weather control grids around America, which I first revealed last May in audio letter 34. From September 24 through October 19, they were shut down for reasons related to the autumn equinox. But on October 20, just 9 days ago, they were turned on again, and they are once again being used to modify our weather. As a result, strange weather can be expected periodically from now on through this winter. Through every avenue imaginable, the Bolsheviks are marshaling their forces to attack, undermine, and if possible, destroy Russia. And to borrow the words used by Alexander Solzhenitsyn in his speech at Harvard last June, quote, "The fight for our planet, physical and spiritual, a fight of cosmic proportions, is not a vague matter of the future. It has already started," unquote. 2 months ago, I warned about the sinister developments that were being set in motion within the Roman Catholic Church. I said that the Bolsheviks want to use the church as a weapon in their war against Russia. by maneuvering the church into an anti-Russian stance under the guise of anti-communism. By doing so, they expect to enlist 700 million Roman Catholics, one-sixth of the human race, into their own battle to the death with Russia. When I recorded audio letter 37 2 months ago, Albino Cardinal Luciani of Venice had just become Pope John Paul I. He quickly became known as the Smiling Pope, yet he left the scene after barely a month's time. As I said last month, the Bolshevik game plan was going to be tried again with another new pope, and that is happening now. The new pope was elected earlier this month on October 16. Instantly, his image as an anti-communist was seized upon by the American news media. And even the name he has taken, Pope John Paul II, signifies a second try in the Bolshevik game plan I revealed in August. Pope John Paul II is the first non-Italian pope in 455 years. Carol Cardinal Wojtyła of Poland. During World War II, Wojtyła was a member of the Polish underground, which fought against the Russian and German occupation forces. For 30 years as a church official, he has challenged and struggled against Poland's Russian-dominated regimes. And just last month, on Sunday, September 17, he played a key role in firing the opening gun of the Roman Catholic Church against Russia. On that day, a pastoral letter spearheaded by Cardinals Wyszynski and Wojtyła and signed by all bishops was read in Catholic services throughout Poland. Poland is the most heavily Roman Catholic of all countries in the Russian orbit, with over 14,000 churches and an estimated 85-90% of the population Roman Catholic. What's more, the Poles have a natural hatred for Russia as Big Brother. So it caused no small concern in both Warsaw and Moscow when the pastoral letter was read to Catholic congregations throughout Poland a month ago. The letter, whose contents reached practically the entire population of Poland, blasted government censorship as, quote, paralyzing the cultural and religious life of the nation, unquote. My friends, the image of the new pope is that of one who stands up to the Russians. But the way in which this image is to be used is another matter. And I think it is essential that both Catholics and non-Catholics alike know what is going on behind the scenes. For at this very moment, the church is becoming both tool and target of the forces of Bolshevism. If what they are doing is not stopped, the Catholic Church will soon be destroyed.
Now this is typical of conspirators. They hinge on to major media events, and they hinge on to major international organizations, and they swirl it all together. And out of this sort of soup, they draw these huge sort of game plans that are being constructed by nobodies behind nothings.
Okay, now this is, I'm glad you brought this up, because 2 months later, Dr. Peter mentioned two cardinals who he labels as these Bolshevik agents. Now, they were Cardinal Bellini, or Benelli, and Cardinal Felici. Now, we all know what happened to Roberto Calvi in 1982, the Vatican banker who was found hung in London. I have wrote 5 books on that situation that had come out in 83 and 84, and every one of them name the important role. They name those two guys, Felici and Bellini, their role in that whole problem with the Vatican Bank. And also in God.
But what does that have to do with the Bolshevik insurgents in the Vatican?
Well, you notice how he said the Vatican would be both a target and a tool. So he had a battle there, and the financial problems the Vatican got into by the late 70s, early 80s. And then you have the book that came out in God's Name, which was done by a respected British journalist who comes up with the idea that John Paul I was murdered by these the same faction that Peter names, these two guys. They play an important role. They're part of the controversy that's...
And which side do they represent?
Well, they're presented in the books as men who expressed great concern about the American Cardinal Archbishop Marcinkus and his role, how he was dealing with underworld people to get money for the Vatican. And he says that, I mean, Marcinkus' role was, ended up, that he ended up in jail. I mean, not jail.
But which side was he representing?
He represented the bad forces in the Vatican.
Which are the Bolsheviks or the...
Now, there's the Rockefeller faction. Now, this is what I'm going to explain.
Okay.
Now, Benelli and Felici, the way they're presented in the books is they tried to draw John Paul II's attention to the problems that Marcinkus was getting them in. And that was in 78-79. He seemed to be not too concerned about it. Now, then Beter said when the P2 scandal broke, which Calvi was part of, that was a Bolshevik destabilizing of Italy. So then subsequent information came out through May and Skolnick and LaRouche that Marcinkus was part of the Rockefeller Nazi network.
Okay, so there is those two cardinals and the theoretically behind the disappearance of the first pope, the 30-day pope, who also sort of orchestrated the bank controversy.
To stir that up and destabilize the Vatican.
Right, because the Vatican was becoming politicized.
Yes.
Okay.
And one thing I said, Marcinkus is in jail. He's not in jail, but he's wanted by the Italian government, and he has to stay inside Vatican City. It's very hard for him to get out of to move around Italy.
Hope the food's good. Let's go back to it.
What I'm about to reveal, my friends, gives me no pleasure at all. I myself was born a Roman Catholic. I was raised a Catholic. I even studied for the priesthood. For me personally, though, there still were unanswered questions. It was only later in the bush in Africa that I truly found our Lord Jesus Christ. But I speak as one who knows what it is to be a Catholic. And my purpose is to help and to build up, not to attack or tear down anything that is good and right. Even if the things I am about to reveal should lead to scandal, I must agree with the words of the wise priest who recently counseled me, quote, "It is better that scandal should come than for the truth to be suppressed," unquote. If the truth does remain suppressed, my friends, the days are numbered for the organized Roman Catholic Church, and there will be repercussions throughout all of Christendom. 2 months ago, one of the briefest papal conclaves in history ended in a surprise election. Cardinal Luciani of Venice became Pope John Paul I. His election had been masterminded without his knowledge by a Bolshevik faction within the Vatican. It was thought that because he was a complete outsider to the Vatican power structure, he would be the ideal puppet pope, easily misled and maneuvered. Within weeks, while the world was still getting acquainted with this man called the Smiling Pope, the Wyszynski Wojtyła pastoral letter was issued in Poland. But Pope John Paul I was turning out to be a disastrous choice by the Bolshevik manipulators. They were failing in their efforts to have him pose a flinty challenge to Russia under the guise of anti-communism. Instead, he was preoccupied with people and how the church might best serve them, including the people of Russia. My friends, the stakes are high and the time is short, and the consequences for Pope John Paul I and for Catholics everywhere were tragic. He had been elected to an office he had neither expected nor wanted, and his reaction had been strangely prophetic. As reported by Newsweek for October 9, 1978, Pope John Paul I had been stunned at his election. And he had said to the other cardinals, quote, "What you have done to me, may God forgive you," unquote. It was almost an echo of the words of our Lord Jesus Christ nearly 2,000 years ago. As he hung dying on the cross, he said, quote, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," unquote. I must now reveal that during the night of Thursday, September 28, 1978, Pope John Paul I left the Vatican alive. He did not die in his sleep that night, as reported by Vatican sources. He lived for 3 more weeks incognito away from the Vatican before finally being shot in the back of his neck by person or persons unknown. On October 4th, the funeral for Pope John Paul I was attended by tens of thousands of mourners and witnessed by television viewers in 31 countries. The body that lay in state was not that of Pope John Paul I, who was still alive. But as everyone knows who has ever lost a loved one, a lifeless body never looks the same as a living person had looked. And so, thanks to the mortician's art, no one questioned that the remains on view were those of Pope John Paul I. After that, even if he himself had walked into a church somewhere and announced, "I am the Pope," quote unquote, he would not have been believed. After all, people had seen the funeral on television, and they had read about it all in the newspapers. Pope John Paul I was still alive on October 16th, the day that his successor, Pope John Paul II, was elected. Since there cannot be two popes at the same time, this raises a thorny question. Was the current pope legally elected? In any case, the man known briefly as the Smiling Pope was put to death the evening of October 19, 1978, 3 days after his successor was named. Shortly thereafter, his body was cremated and the ashes disposed of. My friends, nothing will ever be seen again of the late Pope John Paul I, and no evidence has come to light that would enable his assassins to be identified. Nevertheless, not all of the evidence of his tragic fate has been destroyed. I refer to the body that now occupies the sarcophagus of Pope John Paul I in St. Peter's Basilica. The body is not that of the Pope John Paul I. It should be exhumed, not only for an autopsy, but for scientific identification procedures under independent supervision. If this is done, it will reveal the terrible fraud that now threatens the very soul of the Church. If it is not done, the Bolsheviks will have won already in their grasping to manipulate every Catholic on earth for war. In that event, the Church will be used in the cause of Bolshevik warfare against a Russia that is becoming a Christian nation once again.
Okay, that was the unforgettable Dr. Beter. A couple of things. Right off the bat, you've got to challenge the guy on the fact that he says this guy's been was alive 2 weeks after he allegedly died, and that he was shot in the back. I mean, what sort of source does he have for this information? It sounds like he's just sort of saying it off the top of his head.
Well, he claims that his sources were very high intelligence military people, and he refused to name who they were, because once they told the somebody their source, and that person was killed. So he will not...
Again, I mean, it's an unnamed.
Right.
Even the example that he claims to prevent further misery to his sources, he can't even name the source that was killed. I mean, it all sort of sounds like it's right off the top of the head.
Okay, but he is saying some things that we can check his record. Now, he's saying the Vatican will be moved into an anti-Russia stance. Now, if you've been following the testimony of AGSA right now, that whole story of the Bulgarian lie, the Bulgarian plot, is now being contradicted by AGSA. So I would say, and he talked about that, that situation that would come out of the Pope shooting. Now here it is, in 1985, it's not happening as soon as Dr. Beter predicted, but the story is now coming out, and so we should consider that Beter predicted this. And the truth is coming out about the conspiracy that was going on within the Vatican.
Okay, so then if I am to believe the fact, and I mean it's far easier to believe the fact that there's politics involved in the Vatican, and that the anti-Russian stance is part of the Roman Catholic. I can understand the opposition to Russia by the Roman Catholic Church. I mean that's not confusing, but to say that murder and all this intrigue is part of it, it's a leap of faith that. It can only be really crossed by some people, myself included, with facts.
It certainly was a leap of faith in 1978 when Dr. Beter was saying this, but the events of the last 7 years have made it a lot more likely. For example, the book that I mentioned, In God's Name, shows the evidence that there was a strong possibility that John Paul I was killed. So therefore, you got to give Dr. Beter credit for putting his own reputation on the line and talking about it when nobody would believe it.
There's been... also, let's keep in mind, if Dr. Beter's is to be judged independently, as we're trying to do here, I think it's important to ask yourself the question, how come Calvi and other people who are connected with the Vatican Bank, we find these people hung in the streets? Now, this man was a Vatican banker, very close on a one-to-one relationship with the Pope. So one thing you can say is that there are people close to the high levels in the Vatican who are involved in murder. Now, if they're involved in that step, if they're that close to...
If it can happen outside the Vatican, why can't it happen inside the Vatican?
Right. I would understand if the people around the Vatican, the top, if there weren't this sort of connection with people involved in a murder incorporated. But the numbers of books coming out linking the relationships with the people at the top of the Vatican with underworld criminals and people involved in murder means that the person looking into this from an independent viewpoint can say, well, there certainly are a lot of people around who would be able to pull this sort of thing off. So it may not be probable, but it certainly is possible.
Okay, now one of the other things we talked about was that there are three factions, as Peter sees it, in the world. There are these Bolsheviks, who are sort of offshoots of I guess, the middle class and the wealthy in Russia just at the turn of the century. There are these Rockefellers, who are the 20th century American economic forces. And then there's the oligarchies, the old European royalty families, the Rothschilds, the Queen and King of England as they stand now, that whole section. What are the Queen and King of England, or this oligarchy, this circle of European nobility, what role do they play in this conflict? Because it seems to me that these two people are fighting, but this third party is standing on the sidelines.
Well, Licio Gelli, who had to leave Italy when 2 weeks after the Pope got shot, because the P2 Society, the secret Masonic society he was head of, was exposed. Now, the head of his society and a friend of Gelli, and sponsored Gelli's return from Argentina in the 50s back to Italy after he had to fled Italy during the war, at the end of the war, because he was working with Hitler and Mussolini before that. The head of that group and the man who sponsored him was the Duke of Kent.
Okay, not disputing that they are doing bad things, but what role do they play in this battle for the Vatican?
You mean what role does the royal family of Britain play?
Well, not necessarily the royal family specifically, but this third power group, and not the Bolsheviks, not the Rockefellers.
The Bolsheviks are the European feudal groups from the 19th century. The third group you're thinking of is the secret Christian group in Russia.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the question is, what are they doing?
Yeah.
They've infiltrated the Vatican. News alert several years later, where Dr. Peter explains the changing of doubles and how the Christian group of Russia moved into the Vatican.
But what I don't understand, and maybe I didn't ask the question clearly, are they the target of... The Vatican is obviously a weapon that is being being fought over. Are they the subject for which the weapon is aimed at, or are they one of the people fighting over the weapon? I mean, I don't understand where this third party comes into play, and they have to come into play somewhere, don't they?
The Vatican is an institution that is going to be around for a long while. So what you have is the policy decisions of that institution are very important. And if the people running the Vatican move toward a very warlike stance against Russia, then that's not too good for Russia. So you have on the inner levels, the Curia, the cabinet levels of the Vatican, so to speak, you have these people who
are
working,
three power groups.
Yeah, fighting with their doubles. And you had, as a result of the shooting of the Pope, the Bolshevik group, the European oligarchs, were able to run the Vatican and control its policy from, when was that, 81 till 83. And that's when Lech Walesa rose up in the media. In the summer of 83, the Christian faction in Russia took over the Vatican, and that's when Walesa was retired.
So these three parties are continuing, sort of, it's like an ongoing battle within the Vatican. I'm just trying to get this straight from my own mind. It's an ongoing battle, and what Peter talked about today was the battle that took place between the European oligarchy families and the Rockefeller thing, the Rockefeller section, and essentially later developments show that the secret Russian sect, the third party, came into it about 1983, and now it's a battle between who?
Basically, it's a battle between the Bolsheviks and the Russians, because the Rockefeller faction was knocked off in 79, and they have temporarily aligned with Russia against their Bolshevik enemies.
Okay.
And the question we should ask ourselves is, people are battling for the control of the Vatican, and perhaps once they are in control, they're then interested in maneuvering to take funding in Ontario for Vatican schools.
Oh, now come on.
To increase the amount of indoctrination and increase their sphere of influence.
Well, I guess that ties us up right back to home from whence we broadcast. Don't go to church tomorrow. I guess that's the message you're trying to parlay. I don't know. At any rate, that
just
is...
Just go to the true church.
The true church. The church of the television station. At any rate, enough of that. That is the International Connection for this Saturday. Join us again next Saturday when we are going to be featuring who?
Either Sherman Skolnick or Dick Gregory or the LaRouche people. We haven't determined yet.
Well, spin a Russian roulette will play, I guess. At any rate, the International Connection. Thanks very much for joining in. Tune in again next Saturday at the same time.